Today we're reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 4, Chapter 25, entitled The Characteristics of King Puranjan. Text number 37. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Emang Tvang Adityas Dashtva. Puring Navamukim Vabho. Ayo panitangrina naha kama bhogang satang samaha. Translation. My dear Lord, I have just arranged this city of nine gates for you so that you can have all kinds of sense gratification. You may live here for 100 years. And everything for your sense gratification will be supplied. Purport by His Divine Grace, Srila Prabhupada. Dharmartha kama mokshanam dadaha sampratihetavaha. The wife is the cause of all kinds of success in religion, economic development, sense gratification, and ultimately salvation. When one accepts a wife, it is to be understood that he is being helped in his progressive march toward liberation. In the beginning of life, a person is trained as a brahmachari and is then allowed to marry a suitable girl and become a householder. If one is thoroughly trained in household life, he finds all facilities for human life, eating, sleeping, mating, and defending. Everything is there if it is executed according to the regulative principles. So, Narada Muni is describing the story of King Puranjan to Prachina Varishat. And so, and here, the lady that Puranjan has met is suggesting that they live in the city of nine gates and they enjoy sense gratification. So generally, when we think of household life, we think that this is basically Maya, right? Somebody joins the temple, it's a brahmachari in the temple, and then all of a sudden he, one day after 5-6 years of being a brahmachari in the temple, he gets married. And he's a little embarrassed to put on white cloth and come to the Mangalartik for the first time because he's had the saffron cloth on. So generally in ISKCON we kind of think that, you know, if somebody gets married, it means that it's a fall down. That concept is there. But here we see that Srila Prabhupada is describing the wife is the cause of all kinds of success in religion, economic development, sense gratification, and liberation. So how is that? You know, how do we understand that? Especially when Prahlad Maharaj says, Matir na Krishne paratos vatova mitobi badye to griha bratanam adanta go bir vishitam tamishram puna punas chavita charnanam. That one who's griha brata in the household life, headed towards hellish condition due to their attachment to sense gratification, the uncontrolled senses. And they simply continue to chew that which has already been chewed in so many lifetimes. So it seems like a dichotomy, but actually I think the key word for us to understand what Srila Prabhupada is explaining here in the purport is the training, right? One enters brahmachari life as a training. It's a training. In the Vedic system, the young children would be sent to the house of the spiritual master. And there they would be trained under the guidance of the spiritual master, they would perform austerities. And we see even in the life of Lord Krishna, he went to the ashram of Sandipani Muni, and as a brahmachari, he was trained in the Vedic knowledge. So it's a wonder that Lord Krishna is Vaidaischa Sarvaya Hameva Vedyo, all the Vedas are coming from him, but yet he's in the ashram of Sandipani Muni, learning the Vedas, right? So he did that to set an example that this is required. Training is required, right? Brahmachari training is very important, right? Even for a person to be successful in household life, that foundation of brahmachari training has to be there, right? Because Srila Prabhupada explains that children, they're always happy. They're always, joyful children, right? So whether they're performing austerities or not, they're the same, right? So it's easy for children to perform austerities. And Lord Krishna set the example. He went to the forest on behalf of his spiritual master and collected firewood for the Vedic sacrifices. And he was with Sudama, his friend. And they got caught in a storm, very heavy storm, and everything was flooded. Right? They were there in the freezing cold. And in the morning, Sandipani Muni and the other members of the ashram went out to look for Krishna and Sudama, and they found them and brought them back to the ashram. So this is austerities. Right? The brahmachari goes door to door and begs on behalf of the spiritual master. And whatever he gets, he offers it to the spiritual master. So these austerities are performed as a training to enable one then to enter into household life. But even in household life, the training continues. That's what Srila Prabhupada mentions. In the beginning of life, a person is trained as a brahmachari and then is allowed to marry a suitable girl and become a householder. If one is thoroughly trained in household life, the training continues. Basically, people aren't trained properly. That foundation of brahmachari life is not there. People aren't trained how to do austerities. And so they find it very difficult to even properly execute their duties as a householder. But if they have the proper training, then the wife is the cause of all success. Dharma. The living entity comes in the material world basically due to this desire to enjoy separately from Krishna. And that manifests itself as the attraction for the opposite sex. They want to enjoy sex life. So the wife, Prabhupada said, we don't say no sex, we say no illicit sex. Right? So there's sex, but that's allowed in the grihastha ashram for producing Krishna-conscious children. So if there's not the vivaha sanskar or the institution of marriage, then it all becomes hippiedom, hippies, people just agreeing to live together. And nowadays, people don't even get married, right? They're thinking, well, if I get married, there's going to be a divorce anyway, so why should I get married? She's just going to take half of what I have anyway. So better not to get married. I was talking to one person in St. Louis, and that's what he was telling me. He was living with this girl. They had two kids, but still they hadn't gotten married. Right? So we say that our Krishna consciousness movement is encouraging persons who can't maintain celibacy and brahmachari life, then they should get themselves married, take a suitable wife. Suitable wife that is a wife who also is interested in progress in Krishna consciousness. This is what it's meant by suitable wife. Right? Generally we're thinking, well, some material thing about a wife. She should be very beautiful, or maybe she should be rich, right? So I won't have to work so hard. She'll have all the money, Right? So these are material considerations. These are not the reason to get married. Right? If that's the reason, then it's grihabratanam. The attachment for sex life will only increase more and more and more. It won't diminish. There'll be children, right? And one has to struggle very hard to raise children, right? To provide them all the necessities. And there's no guarantee how they will turn out also. If one's very, very fortunate, his children will be nice and submissive. But that is what we see as becoming more of a rare and rare thing. By the time the children have their own families, they don't care for the parents anymore. They put them in the old age home. Right? Somebody else should take care of them. Right? And even the parents don't feel any, they don't want to burden their children with their own old age. So they agree to go to the, you know, the old age home. But in a Krishna conscious atmosphere, if the children are Krishna conscious, they see their mother and father as devotees of Krishna, then they're encouraged to take care of their mother and father because it's Vaishnav seva. It becomes service to a Vaishnav. So everything in Krishna consciousness is wonderfully balanced, but the basis has to be progress in Krishna consciousness. Then everything will become proper. There'll be proper religion, real religion, right? Not cheating religion. Right? In this material world, there's two kinds of persons, Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur used to say, the cheaters and the cheated. So if the marriage life is not based on Krishna consciousness, if it's not based on real religion, then that will be the end result. Somebody got cheated, and someone is a cheater. Just recently, a very big man. He was the leader of the whole army in Afghanistan. Right? And then they made him the leader of the CIA. Right, the Central Intelligence Agency in America. In fact, in the old days in India, it came in the parliament that the ISKCON devotees were the CIA. And they used to think we were the CIA, right? So the leader of the CIA, recently he was forced to resign because one lady who was doing his biography, she was taking his life history and she was going to write a book about him. She did write a book about him, but he fell down with her. And for 1 year they were in bed together, they said. They say the media was embedded in Afghanistan so they could report on the war. So she was embedded with this person. And he was a very big man. So unless there's a mood to understand the philosophy of Krishna consciousness and to progress in Krishna consciousness, then definitely there'll be many great obstacles to even having normal relationships, right? Kama, dharma. So religion, real religion is Krishna consciousness. And kama, sense gratification. Sense gratification regulated. Regulated sense gratification. Prabhupada said that sense gratification is like salt, right? If you don't have some salt in the sabji, it's not tasty, right? But if you put too much salt, then you ruin it. Is it not? Right? If there's a new cook and they don't know how much salt to put, or they're cooking too big a quantity, they're not used to that, they put too much salt, they spoil the sabji, right? So sense gratification is like that. Some sense gratification we require. And it's all arranged through the regulator principles, right? But if there's too much sense gratification, which is advertised in the modern society, unlimited sense gratification, the concept that if it feels good, do it. Whatever you're, don't have any inhibitions about anything, right? Just do it. This kind of mentality spoils everything. No one is happy. Right? And such persons who have this mentality, it's very difficult for them to understand they're not the body, what to speak of understand that Krishna is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. But the whole society is based on this. Right? The society is enamored with this idea of bodily sense gratification. Adanta gobir, and therefore they can't control their senses. And if one can't control their senses, they are, you know, headed towards a hellish existence, terrible existence. Vishitam timishram, towards a hellish life. Because it appears to be a place for happiness, sense gratification, but there's not real happiness there. Rather, it's described in the Bhagavatam, it's like a well. It's like a blind well that's covered with grass. Right? You can fall down into the well. There was actually a devotee on Padyatra. His name was Ginagri Das. So Padyatra used to get up early in the morning, and then, because they were in villages, they would go out in fields and relieve themselves, then take a bath. Then there would be Mangalartik in front of Gornitai deities that were in the bullock cart. And then immediately after Mangalartik, they would start walking. So early in the morning, even before the sun come up, devotees would have to go out and do their morning duties. So this one devotee, he went walking and he fell in a dry well, very deep down into the well. And he broke many bones. And he was shouting. But nobody could hear him because he was so down in the well. And it wasn't until after the sun came up and the devotees started to go, and then they realized, well, where's Kitanagari Das? And then they started to look for him, and they found him down in the well. Right? So Shastra explains that that's what, you know, materialistic household life is. It's like falling in a dry well. No one is there to save you. You shout and scream, no one hears your cries. Right? And because of the slick walls, it's not possible on your own to climb up and climb out. Right? So that's the position. It's a very horrible position of material life, like falling into the blind well. And in such a situation, parato svatova, that on our own, svato, by ourselves, we can't get out of such a situation. Neither by the help of others' good advice, parata, or a combination of both. Right? As long as one has the mentality that I will enjoy the material world. Grihavratanam. So this idea that I can enjoy here in the material world has to be wiped off. And Krishna is there to help us. Krishna is always helping the devotee to understand I can enjoy here. Right? It's like as soon as you come to Vrindavan, you get a sneezing and a chest cold, and right? And then you realize I can enjoy here. Right? That's the help that Krishna gives. He's there to instruct the devotee. Right? So how to give up this enjoyment mentality? You know, it's the age-old question. It's the endeavor of the great sages and saints. Well, first of all, no one ever gave it up unless they had the mercy of the devotee. Mahatvaram vimuktes. Without the dust of the lotus feet of a pure devotee, those gates, the vishitam timishram, are wide open. You can't avoid it. You're destined for that. Right? Only by the mercy of a pure devotee of the Lord, the dust from his lotus feet. The dust means to hear from, to take instructions from, and to follow. to the best of one's ability, those instructions. Then it's possible to give up this mentality of griha bratanam, of trying to enjoy this material body. Mahatmanas tumam partam daivim prakriti mashrita bhajantyananya manaso ghatva bhutani maviyam. And the great souls, the Mahatma, what is a Mahatma? Right? In India, everybody's rubber stamped as Mahatma. Mahatma this, Mahatma that. Right? But we know from Shastra, Mahatma means one who's a devotee of Krishna. One who's completely surrendered unto Krishna, who doesn't have any other desire except for the satisfaction of Krishna. That is a Mahatma. Right? The devotees of the Lord, a Vaishnava. And by serving such devotees, Vaishnavas, then this mentality that I can enjoy in the material world becomes wiped off. As soon as that's wiped away, then our journey back home, back to Godhead, becomes very easy, very fixed. So it doesn't matter. Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur says in his book, whether you go to the forest or whether you're in the home, grihe tako, vane tako, that doesn't matter. What really matters is that one has to surrender to Krishna, surrender to Krishna's devotees. That's the important thing, and that's what Srila Prabhupada is emphasizing in this book, in this purport, that the training, ISKCON is a movement to train people. To train people at what? To train people how to serve Krishna. That's why Srila Prabhupada made this Krishna Balaram temple. He explains in his purport, in the 10th canto of the Bhagavatam, actually the last purports that Srila Prabhupada wrote in this world. It's such an amazing thing. Srila Prabhupada, I had the opportunity to be there with him at the end. He was in such a debilitated condition, he couldn't raise himself up from the bed. I saw once he wanted to speak something, he wanted to give a lecture. So one devotee was holding his back, one devotee was holding his shoulders because he was so weak that he couldn't sit up. And then he gave a lecture. He said, "We're not this body. We're spirit soul." And if you read those purports, those last purports that Srila Prabhupada wrote, I think it's chapter 13 of the 10th canto, they're so crystal clear. He talks about this temple. He said originally this was an empty lot. It was just a desolate place. But due to the desire of a devotee, a temple of Krishna manifested here so everyone could render service to Krishna. Now we know who that devotee is, right? Srila Prabhupada, he wanted everyone to be able to have an opportunity to serve Krishna. That is the perfection of life. That is the goal of life. In the material world, everyone thinks the goal of life is sense gratification. It's all pervading. Everyone is trained up from the very beginning to try to get ahead in the matter of sense gratification, acquiring wealth, name, fame, position. Sometimes even in our ISKCON, we become bewildered. We think that everything is depending upon some position, some fame that we get. And certainly those things are there, But for a devotee, they're just a bewilderment. They're not interested in fame. They're not interested in position. They're interested in bhakti. They want love for Krishna. They know what the goal is. These other things are just a bewilderment. Having many followers. Srila Prabhupada had so many followers. He had people that were ready to die for him. If he said, that would be it. They'd die right on the spot for him. But he wasn't attached. He saw everything as the mercy of his spiritual master. What did he say in Los Angeles at the arrival address in 1975? What did he say? It was the pinnacle of his movement in Los Angeles. They owned a whole street in Los Angeles. What did he say? He said, personally, I have no qualification. My only qualification is that I wanted to serve my Guru Maharaj. So kindly help me. This is my request, he said. Publish as many books as possible in as many languages and distribute them all over the world, and the Krishna consciousness movement will automatically spread. That's genuine humility. Right? Recognizing that everything was by the mercy of Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur. Srila Prabhupada even felt that the disciples weren't his disciples. They were sent by Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur to help him serve as Guru Maharaj through spreading Lord Chaitanya's movement. So this is a very, very elevated mentality, right? But we're meant to inculcate that in our devotional service. We're not here to try to be professional musicians and show everybody that, you know, we really got it down in the alankars. No, that's not it. We're missing the point. The point is to satisfy Krishna. The point is to please Krishna. If Krishna is pleased, automatically everyone will become pleased. Why was everyone pleased with Srila Prabhupada? Newspaper reporters would come in inimical and they would go out smiling, happy, satisfied, right? Even though sometimes he would chastise them to the max, still they took it. Why? Because Srila Prabhupada was offering all of his activities, all of his thoughts, everything to Krishna. And because everything was for Krishna, all of Krishna's parts and parcels, all living entities that came in contact with them, they were also satisfied. So sometimes it appears like we're so far off from the goal that it's not even worth trying. But we should never become disheartened, because we have some very powerful supporters, and we have some very powerful help. We have some very powerful weapon to fight Maya. You know, when Dhruva Maharaj was fighting the Yakshas, and they created an illusion of blood, pus, mucus, tridents, they were streaming out of the sky at him. The Yakshas had created this illusion. So Dhruva had a very powerful weapon called the Narayan Asta. And as soon as he took that bow, that arrow, and put it in his bow, the illusion created by the Yakshas dissipated. And he could see them, and he began to fight with them like anything. So Srila Prabhupada mentions in that purport that we also have a very powerful asta. And that weapon is Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Ram, Hare Ram, Ram Ram. As soon as we put that weapon, right, and we line it up, immediately the illusion of Maya becomes dissipated. This mentality that I can enjoy here in the material world, it fades away. It becomes insignificant. So Srila Prabhupada has encouraged us to always chant Hare Krishna. I can remember that the first time that Srila Prabhupada entered his room here in Vrindavan, 1974, this was just a construction site, but Prabhupada's quarters were finished. And some devotees were there. And myself and Vishnu Jan Maharaj were at the window, because so many devotees were in the room, you couldn't get inside the room. And then Srila Prabhupada walked in the room to sit in his desk. And immediately, spontaneously, Vishnu Jan Maharaj came out of his mouth. He said, chant Hare Krishna and be happy, just by seeing Srila Prabhupada. Chant Hare Krishna and be happy. That was Prabhupada's instruction to us. Chant Hare Krishna and be happy. It seems like a very simple thing, and it is very simple if we apply it in our lives. Chant Hare Krishna and be happy. And if we do that, then this everything will come in line. Right? There won't be anything lacking. Everything will be sufficient. There will be dharma, there will be artha, there will be kama, and ultimately there will be moksha. Moksha doesn't mean some impersonal liberation. The impersonalist can never surrender to Krishna because they can't give up their idea of sense gratification. Right? But moksha means, we understand from Srila Prabhupada, it means going back home, back to Godhead, back to the spiritual world. This is real moksha. Back with Krishna. Either as Krishna's servant, or as Krishna's friend, or as Krishna's parent, or as Krishna's lover. This is the goal. As devotees of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, this is our goal. We're not trying to make a perfect situation here in the material world. It's not possible anyway, no matter how hard you try. Whatever it is, there's always going to be difficulties. But we tolerate all the difficulties that are there and execute our devotional service properly because we have a goal. We're not worried about the obstacles. We just keep focused on the goal. Anyone who is ever successful at anything, whether it's a tennis champion or an Olympic sports person, whatever it is, they kept themselves fixed on the goal. And I don't know, they don't play baseball in India, but you know, keep your eye on the ball, they say. Right? If you don't keep your eye on the ball, you won't catch it, you won't hit it or anything. So in the same way, we have to keep our eye on the goal. Keep our attention and our meditation on the goal. And that's very clear what Prabhupada said. Back home, back to Godhead. This is not our home. Right? We're all foreigners here. Just like in India, you have to have a visa to come here. Right? And once your visa is up, you got to get out. Right? So whether you're Indian or whether you're some other country, we're all foreigners. This material world means everyone is a foreigner because this is not our home. Right? This is not our home. Our home is in the spiritual world with Krishna. So we're trying to get back home. And Srila Prabhupada has kindly come to give us this International Society for Krishna Consciousness to help us get back home. But just as Prahlad Maharaj, he wasn't satisfied. He was already situated. Lord Nrisimhadev told him, take whatever you like. Take any benediction. He said, my dear Lord, since I'm chanting your holy name and rendering your devotional service, I'm completely satisfied. But then Lord Nrisimhadev insisted, okay, take something, you know. He said, all right, my dear Lord, then you kindly deliver my demoniac father. Right? Prahlad wasn't satisfied just to be situated in pure devotional service on his own. He wanted all the other fools and rascals who are simply trying to enjoy in this material world to wake up and understand the nature and the falsity and the temporariness of this material world. And desire, and they should also come back home, back to Godhead. So this is the mood of a devotee. And that's why Srila Prabhupada requested us to help other people also. Because by that endeavor of distributing Srila Prabhupada's books, trying to engage people in Krishna consciousness, we'll also make advancement. Krishna sees that. Krishna sees that on his behalf, we're propagating, right? We're soliciting others to take to Krishna consciousness. And then one becomes very quickly recognized by Lord Krishna. Right? And that's the whole goal, is to be recognized by Krishna. So it's really, preaching is really in the mood of the gopis. Radharani becomes much more satisfied when she pushes one of the other gopis forward to enjoy with Krishna than when she's with Krishna herself. That's the highest mood. And Srila Prabhupada confirmed that this, you know, this Sankirtan movement, distributing Srila Prabhupada's books, is in the mood of the gopis. So people want to enter the mood of the gopis. But in order to do that, you have to preach. Right? You have to approach the conditioned souls and preach to them. And what's the best way to preach to them? Srila Prabhupada said, what is the use of your 20-minute lecture in one ear and out the other? Distribute my books, and that will be solid work. That goes home with them into the house. It's a statistical fact that one book is read by 10 different people. Right? So one person distributes 10 books. They've contacted 100 people. It's the best way to geometrically increase the preaching activities. So, just to sum up here, real household life is being progressive in Krishna consciousness, and that's when all of the necessities will be fulfilled, where we're progressing like that. And Krishna consciousness is the should be the goal of everyone's life, regardless of what ashram they're in. And if they do, then they will be progressive towards the march back home, back to Godhead. Hare Krishna. So I'll stop there. Are there any questions? You got the microphone?
Hare Krishna, Prabhupada. You have given a wonderful class. Probably my question is like this, like, when you come in contact with this Krishna consciousness movement, so in the beginning of our spiritual life, we perform some religion, and after that, dharma and artha, then comes artha and dharma, artha and kam. And
kam, that's the problem.
So, you see, we are stuck on these three things, but we can't reach this moksha and Krishna prem. So what would be their destination, like those who are not performing pure devotional service, what would be their destination like?
Well, someone who doesn't perform pure devotional service, if they're chanting the holy name, and the Harinam Chintamani Bhaktivinoda Thakur explains that even offensive chanting of the holy name, you'll have some destination, and that destination will be the heavenly planets. And if you're chanting Nama Bas, you'll get Brahmajyoti, impersonalist liberation. But if you chant Shudnam, then you can enter into the spiritual world. So everyone has a destination. But our effort, our focus is that we want to chant purely, without offense, so that we can go back to the spiritual world. Right? And you know, we have different ways to become pure in our chanting. The first way is to always chant and don't stop. Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Ram, Ram Ram. Our tendency is, 16 rounds done, take the bead bag, throw it in the locker, it's done. Right? But we have so much time that we could chant. Right? So chanting, continuously chanting. Another method for becoming free from offenses, Srila Prabhupada explains, is to develop a good service mentality. To do whatever we do for the pleasure of Krishna with a positive mood, whatever it is. A lot of times we begrudgingly do our service. Oh, I got to get up for Mangal Arti and it's so cold, you know. Right? Or whatever it is, we do with a positive attitude. Or do something for a devotee. You know, some personal service for another devotee. That's developing a proper service mentality. And if you have that proper service mentality, the idea to help someone else, that's very conducive to becoming free from your offenses in the holy name. And then another method that we have for becoming free from offenses to the holy name is a very, very powerful method. Srila Prabhupada explains in the Chaitanya Charitamrita that there's offenses to be considered in the chanting of the Hare Krishna Maha Mantra, but in the chanting of the Panchatattva Mantra, these offenses are not considered. One makes progress, whether you're offensive or not offensive, by chanting Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhar Srivasadi Gauravakta Vrinda. So taking shelter of the Panchatattva, taking shelter of the lotus feet of Lord Chaitanya and Lord Nityananda, that will also help us to become free from our offenses to the holy name.
Yeah, you talked a little bit about marriage. How do you know when you find a suitable wife, and when is the right time to get married?
That's why I only talked a little bit about it. It's a complicated story, Prabhuji. You know, there's marriage bureaus. Sometimes they don't work. There's astrologers. Sometimes they don't work. So there's many things that devotees have tried to do. But it's kind of like, you know, marriage is kind of like something that's written across your forehead. It's your prabdha. It's your karma, so to speak. And, you know, some devotees have been in some pretty bad marriages, they felt, right? But then they also saw that as the mercy of Krishna. And they came out of it with a positive mood. And some marriages last for a long time. And they're, you know, progressive spiritually. So it just depends on our own individual psychophysical nature, our previous karmas. So many different elements are there. It's not just one thing, right? But
is it necessary to get married?
Depends upon who you are.
Okay.
It's much easier if you don't have to. Before I got married, I was a brahmachari for 14 years. And whenever I traveled, I just had one small little BTG box. And everything I owned was in that BTG box. It's like, you know, you could keep 300 BTGs in it. And in the old days, you know, if you were a brahmachari and you had more stuff than could fit in a BTG box, then the other brahmacharis would say, Prabhu, you're in Maya. You're in Maya, Prabhu. Right? But then after I got married, when I traveled, I was always with 7 bags or 8 bags, you know. So household life means extra baggage. And it's not that we're denigrating household life in any way, but Srila Prabhupada used to say that if you can stay brahmachari, that is best. But generally speaking, 99.9% everybody gets married. There are some that can, and the spiritual master previously would determine. He would see the nature of the brahmachari while he was training him. And he could see that this one, he can continue in brahmachari life. And they would go on to continue to serve the spiritual master and help in the ashram as brahmacharis. And then he would see that someone else is more suitable to household life. Right? So, in the International Society for Krishna Consciousness, we have a society specifically for that. You have senior devotees that you can take guidance from, right? And they, by seeing your nature, can advise you whether you're a brahmachari material or your householder material, right? And so there's many different helps that we can... There's descriptions in the Shastra about what's the mentality of the brahmachari, what's the mentality of a householder, right? So we take help from all those different sources and take a decision whether we'll remain as a brahmachari, a householder. But the first thing is to get that brahmachari training. Right? Whether you become a householder or not in the future, that's another thing. But the main thing is to get that training. Without that training, there's no foundation for anything. Everything becomes much more difficult. And if you have that early brahmachari training, early in life, then everything becomes much easier. Who should train brahmachari? Well, in the Vedic system, the spiritual master would train the brahmacharis. Yes. So I think Srila Prabhupada set the example as the perfect guru, and he was training his devotees how to be brahmacharis, even to the point where he showed them how to put on a dhoti. Right? Remember, you know, a brahmachari wears a dhoti like this. You wear it all the way around and it kind of folds in the front. Prabhupada showed them how to put on a brahmachari dhoti. Right? So yes, it's the responsibility of the spiritual master to train the brahmacharis in brahmachari life, to engage them in menial services. So they develop that humble attitude. And that was this program in ISKCON. I remember when I first joined, the service I got first was cleaning all the toilets. Right? And then after that, after about a month, I got elevated to cleaning the pots. Right? And when Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur was introduced to one PhD that wanted to join the mutt, the devotees, this is a PhD, Srila Bhaktisiddhanta, he said, yes, very good, tell him to clean the pots. Right? So that humility, that menial service, it inculcates the proper mentality to continue to the next stage of devotional service. So that, living in the ashram, living in the temple, it automatically helps us when we go through those different menial tasks on behalf of Krishna and for the pleasure of the spiritual master. Is that all right?
Hare Krishna, what happens in a case when the wife is practicing to be a devotee, but the husband and children eat meat? So should she serve them?
Yes, she should.
Since you mentioned the psychosomatic aspect of relationship, in case the guru doesn't assign the marriage or the astrologer, one advised by those expert in human conduct, they advise that once there is a candidate, for example, if boy sees a girl as a possible candidate, he should find out what was the relationship with their parents, especially with the father if it's in the case of a girl. If the father was not there, he was not present, he was a drunkard or he was abusive, or try to avoid it because there are consequences. Mm-hmm. Same thing happens the opposite way. If if it's a boy and his mother was not there, she wasn't loving, she was not caring, she was not present, that will also be reacted in the relationship. So it's always good, as a general advice, to find out what was the relationship between the candidate and their parents. And if it was healthy and nice, that's a very good sign.
There you have it. There's another tip.
Hare Krishna Prabhuji, thank you very much for the wonderful class. Prabhuji, I wanted, since you already touched both the aspects, the brahmachari aspect and the married life aspect, how should one seek a perfect balance between the material pursuits and the spiritual pursuits?
Well, the train runs on two tracks. In household life, certainly there's material necessities and you have to look after that. But at the same time, you can't ignore the spiritual practices that one has to perform. So in that way, you balance it. Srila Prabhupada said that householders should, make enough for the necessities of life, right? But not overdo it, so much so that you ignore the spiritual practices. And at the same time, Srila Prabhupada wanted the householders, their earning, they should donate money to the temple, The idea was 50%. If you became a householder, you get 50%. Now there's you know, was that 50% of the gross income or 50% after expenses? You know, that you decide. But definitely the idea of you know, supporting the Krishna consciousness movement with funds that you earn as a householder should also be there. Another duty of a householder is to distribute prasadam. Srila Prabhupada gives the example of his own father. Every day he would invite sadhus for lunch. Right? So these are the duties of a householder. Distributing prasadam, supporting the temple, and at the same time practicing spiritual activities, you know. And that's the balance.
Yes, Srila Prabhupada spoke about this in this purport, that our enjoying mentality.
About what?
Like, we want to enjoy this material world. So you see, our enjoying mentality in the gross level is much more in the subtle level is much more stronger than even gross level.
Yes. Like, from the subtle comes the gross. It starts actually on the subtle. The desire to enjoy in the material world is coming from the mind, right? And then it filters down. Actually, you work with your mind. You don't really work with your physical body. But you think to do something first. And after you've thought and you're willing, thinking, feeling, willing to do something, automatically the body goes into motion. So it's really, what you say is true. It's not so much the gross aspect, it's the subtle aspect that we have to work on. And that subtle aspect, is it comes under control by purifying. Therefore, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu says, Cheto Dharpana Marjanam. The consciousness, or the mirror of the consciousness, the mind, it becomes purified by chanting, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Ram, Hare Ram. And that very first statement, Cheto Dharpana Marjanam, it takes us from the very beginning of Krishna consciousness, coming out of the bodily concept of life, giving up this idea that I can enjoy in the material world. And it also brings us to the highest level, of understanding what is our relationship with Krishna. Right? Purification and Sarva Bhakti, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu says. This is what this shloka, Cheto Dharpana Marjana, means. The beginning and the ultimate highest goal. What is our relationship with Krishna in the spiritual world? So it's all there in the holy name. And it will adjust our mental platform, our gross physical platform, and even bring us to the spiritual platform by chanting Krishna's wonderful holy name.
One more question.
You got a lot of questions.
Like when you chant in the morning time, you see, our mind is so restless and so turbulent that although we are engaged in the service of Lord Krishna, like even in physical level, still our mind is going here and there. So, like, how it could be possible, even after putting so much effort, we can't chant, how it could be possible at the time of death to remember Krishna?
You know, the idea of the mind being restless and difficult to control, was that question was even posed to Lord Krishna by Arjuna. Lord Krishna explained the whole sixth chapter of the Bhagavad Gita about meditational yoga, and in the end, Arjuna says to Lord Krishna that it just seems impossible to control the restless mind like it is to control the wind. And Krishna agreed with him, yes, the mind is difficult to control, but it's possible by constant practice and detachment. So we have to continue to do those things, to continue to practice chanting the holy name. Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Ram, Hare Ram. And the detachment aspect is to carefully avoid the sinful activities in the form of the four regulator principles. So if we do those two things, continue to chant, that's our practice, and the detachment is to follow the four regulator principles. Gradually, the mind will come under control. And you can always chant louder. That helps too. Okay. Oh, Madhaji?
Thank you for the class. So you speak a lot about the training that brahmacharis go through, but and I hear this a lot in the Bhagavatam and what Prabhupada says, but what is the training for women? I mean, for brahmacharis it's not necessary to get married, but Prabhupada says all women should get married, so it seems to be a more important thing for women, but what is the training? I don't mean traditionally, but now in ISKCON.
Oh, now in ISKCON, not traditionally.
Yeah, because, I mean, traditionally it was in the home, but
and basically,
you know, it still is
in the home, right? Didn't your mother teach you how to cook?
Yeah, but what I'm talking more about, like, austerities. Like, do they have to perform austerities and all that sort of stuff?
I don't think that kind of austerity so much is there for ladies, right? that a brahmacharya would perform in the ashram, like going out door to door. But the ladies in Krishna consciousness also, the best book distributors actually were ladies. Oh, excuse me. Janarani was big, you got to admit. She'd get out there in the airport and she'd have $100 in her pocket in a few minutes, you know. She was a good distributor. So that we transcend the bodily platform in Krishna consciousness also. Srila Prabhupada said that our lady devotees are as equal with their brothers in Krishna consciousness and spreading Krishna consciousness. So that's really on a spiritual platform. We try to get above the bodily concept of life. But then we do have the differences, right? Men don't get pregnant, ladies get pregnant. There is a difference, right? And along with that comes certain activities that they perform. And in those activities, there's a different kind of training. You know? When Prabhupada said that, you know, he wanted ladies to be expert at sewing, he wanted them to be expert at cooking, but it didn't stop them from also preaching. Because we're not on the bodily concept. But we do have these material bodies and we have to engage them accordingly. Men and women have different activities. But on a spiritual platform, there's no difference. Is that okay? I mean, it's kind of a controversial thing. There's like a raging war going on in the internet whether ladies should give initiation or not give initiation and, you know. But we don't want to have a big fight between men and women here. We want to realize ultimately that we are spirit souls. You know, we're all servants of Krishna. And regardless of what kind of material body we're stuck in, we want to get out of it and go back home, back to Godhead. And so we're all here to help each other to do that in a cooperation. We're not here to have a fight between the genders. You know, that's not our purpose. That wasn't Prabhupada's purpose. And all of the ladies, they felt very sheltered under Srila Prabhupada. They felt that Srila Prabhupada was their father, he was their guide, he was dealing with them so wonderfully and so gently. So we're meant to be like that. And unfortunately, many times, we're not. So please forgive us. But that was what Srila Prabhupada wanted. He wanted everybody to feel, man, woman, child, that ISKCON is their home. It's the place where they can... You nurture the Krishna consciousness to the ultimate. Hare Krishna. Okay. Thank you very much. Gantranath Srimad Bhagavatam ki. Srila Prabhupada ki. Itai Govardhana Nandi.